In the latest chapter of our collective nightmare, we mourn the passing of Nick Mangold, a man who somehow managed to be both a legendary New York Jets center and a victim of life's cruel lottery. At 41, Mangold has succumbed to complications from kidney disease, a grim reminder that even the giants among us are not immune to the relentless march of time and misfortune. For nearly two decades, Mangold fought against his own body with the same grit he displayed on the field. But unlike in football, there are no comebacks when your kidneys decide they've had enough. It's an unwinnable game where you can only hope for a miracle donor or resign yourself to an existence tethered to dialysis machines. Mangold's plea for help went out into the void earlier this month, a desperate call for salvation from communities that cheered him on as he bulldozed through defensive lines. Yet here we are, left with nothing but condolences and memories of his toughness and leadership. The Jets chairman called him the heartbeat of their offensive line. Now that heart has stopped beating. The timing couldn't have been more absurdly tragic, just before the Jets managed their first win of the season against Cincinnati. An irony so bitter it almost seems scripted by some cosmic playwright with a penchant for dark humor. As if winning one game could somehow balance out losing someone who was the heart and soul of the team. And what do we say? We offer prayers, thoughts, maybe light a candle or two. But none of it matters because he's gone. Rex Ryan sheds tears on ESPN while Randy Moss offers comfort. A tableau of mourning played out on national television like some macabre reality show segment. Nick Mangold will forever be remembered as a Jet, yet it's cold comfort when faced with such stark finality. A seven-time Pro Bowler inducted into their Ring of Honor last year, achievements now reduced to footnotes in obituaries written too soon. As we extend sympathies to his wife Jenny and their four children, Matthew, Eloise, Thomas, and Charlotte, we're reminded once again that life is arbitrary at best and merciless at worst. In this bleak tapestry woven from loss after loss after loss, we continue forward because what else is there?
Welcome to First World Problems, where we tackle the pressing issues that truly matter, like why the East Wing of the White House is now a pile of rubble. Yes, folks, President Trump has decided to replace it with a golden ballroom, because nothing screams America like demolishing historical architecture for a venue that can host 1,000 people who will never actually fill it. You see, the East Wing was always considered the seat of soft power, a place for first ladies and social events. But in Trump's America, if it's not covered in gold leaf and doesn't have his face plastered somewhere between Laura Bush and Hillary Clinton's portraits, does it even count? White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt insists there's nothing unusual about this renovation. True, past presidents have made updates, like adding a movie theater or an emergency bunker, but they generally stopped short of wielding a wrecking ball like they're auditioning for Extreme Makeover, Presidential Edition. And let's not forget the history being bulldozed here. This was where Jackie Kennedy once doted over gardens designed by I.M. Pei. Yes, the same guy who put a glass pyramid on top of the Louvre. But hey, who needs artful landscaping when you can have red Christmas trees instead? The bunker below, it's where Dick Cheney went during 9/11, and where Trump himself took refuge from protesters his first term. Now it'll just be underfoot at weddings, where guests can write cards to service members while sipping champagne under crystal chandeliers. Trump assures us private donors will foot the bill for his glittering monument to greatness. But as much as some mourn what's lost, a legacy no money could buy, the real tragedy might be how little any of this matters when you're busy watching cat videos on your phone. So next time you find yourself fretting over trivialities like historical preservation or architectural integrity, remember, there are bigger problems out there, like finding parking near your favorite brunch spot or dealing with slow Wi-Fi at Starbucks. And that's today's edition of First World Problems, because sometimes gilded ballrooms are just what democracy ordered. Or maybe didn't, but got anyway.
Ah, the White House's East Wing. Once a quaint little corner of history where first ladies roamed and presidents watched movies. Now reduced to a pile of rubble because, well, who needs historical charm when you can have a golden ballroom? President Trump has decided that the best way to honor America's greatness is by demolishing the place where dignitaries once gathered and replacing it with an opulent dance hall fit for kings, or perhaps just one king in particular. After all, nothing screams American values quite like a lavish spectacle funded by private donors eager to curry favor. The East Wing was always the quieter sibling of its more politically charged counterpart, the West Wing, a place where soft power flourished under chandeliers and Christmas trees that were sometimes red enough to be mistaken for dystopian warnings. But why preserve spaces where presidents pondered policy or penned notes to soldiers when you can bulldoze them for something shiny and new? Gone are the days when tourists would wander through halls lined with portraits of first ladies, each one telling stories of grace and resolve. Instead, we get to look forward to gilded mirrors reflecting back our own bewilderment at how quickly history can be rewritten or erased entirely. But fear not, the Presidential Emergency Operations Center remains intact beneath what was once the East Wing. Because even in this brave new world of ballrooms over bunkers, there's still room for a bit of irony, safeguarding against future crises while simultaneously inviting them with open arms. And so we march on toward progress, or whatever we're calling it these days, under the watchful eye of Trump's portrait now moved somewhere else in this ever-evolving shrine to self-glorification. Surely nothing could go wrong as we dance our way into tomorrow's headlines from this glittering monument to modernity.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the meaning of life while sipping our existential dread like a lukewarm cup of coffee. Today, we're diving into the curious world of political campaigns, inspired by an article from CNN titled, "Mamdani Echoes Sanders' Rallying Cry Ahead of Joint Campaign Event." Ah, politics, a realm where everyone is selling something, except for Zoran Mamdani, who claims New York City is not for sale. A bold statement in a world where everything has a price tag, Mamdani's rally slogan, "New York is not for sale," suggests that cities are more than just real estate listings. Yet here we are in 2025, under President Donald Trump's second term, proof that sometimes reality feels like satire. So what does it mean when politicians say they're fighting against commodification? Are they battling billionaires or just trying to sell us on another brand of hope? As Bernie Sanders joins Mamdani on stage in Queens, one can't help but wonder, is this a revival tour for ideals that never quite made it past the opening act? In politics, much like life itself, there's always talk about change and progress. But isn't it ironic how often these conversations circle back to the same starting point? It's as if we're running on a treadmill powered by idealism, moving furiously yet going nowhere. And then there's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez lending her voice to Mamdani's cause. Remember when she was heralded as the future of progressive politics? Now she's part of the establishment she once railed against. It seems even revolutionaries have to clock in eventually. Mamdani's campaign focuses on freezing rents and making buses free. Promises that sound great until you realize someone has to foot the bill. Governor Kathy Hochul supports universal childcare but draws the line at taxing the wealthy. Because why raise taxes when you can just wish upon a star for funding? Of course, none of this matters if Mamdani doesn't win over his own party first. A party still figuring out how to oppose Trump without tearing itself apart at every seam. It's almost poetic how Democrats keep searching for unity amidst chaos while Republicans sit back and enjoy their existential popcorn. In essence, Mamdani's quest mirrors our own daily struggle. Seeking meaning and purpose in systems designed to confuse us into complacency, we aim high with noble intentions only to crash land into reality's hard truths. So let's toast with our metaphorical half-empty glasses to politicians who promise change they can't deliver and voters who believe them anyway, to cities not for sale yet perpetually up for grabs, and most importantly, to all of us, navigating life's absurdities with humor as dry as week-old bread left out on election day morning. Remember, folks, life might be meaningless, but at least it's entertaining.
The capitalist fever dream unfolds yet again as the world's two economic titans toy with the global marketplace like puppeteers pulling strings for sport. The U.S. and China, in a move that smacks of desperation cloaked as diplomacy, have agreed upon a framework for a trade deal. This so-called agreement is little more than a band-aid on the gaping wound of economic instability, a temporary respite from tariffs that threatened to soar to an obscene 157% on Chinese goods. Meanwhile, investors salivate at the prospect of another interest rate cut from the Federal Reserve, their eyes glazed over with dollar signs. As stock futures rise, reflecting this fragile truce between nations, one can't help but marvel at the sheer absurdity of it all. The Dow breaks through new thresholds like a fevered dreamer chasing elusive fantasies, above 47,000 now, as if numbers alone could mask the rot. Beneath, inflation simmers just below expectations, and central bankers are poised to wield their blunt instruments once again, cutting interest rates in an attempt to stave off the inevitable collapse. In Asia, markets dance to this twisted tune as well. Japan's Nikkei leaps forward by 1.9%. South Korea's Kospi bounds upward by 2.4%. And Hong Kong's Hang Seng inches higher, all nodding in approval at this illusory progress. It's a global charade where each uptick in market indices serves as a fleeting balm for deeper systemic failures. President Trump's impending meeting with China's Xi Jinping looms large, a spectacle that promises more political theater than substantive resolution. Washington and Beijing have been locked in an escalating game of brinkmanship over rare earth minerals, resources essential for modern technology, and weaponized now as bargaining chips in this high-stakes poker game. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent offers hollow optimism ahead of these talks, his assurances lacking substance or detail, a chorus we've heard too often before. As Trump hints at concessions and comprehensive deals with vague bravado, we witness yet another chapter in this saga where diplomacy is reduced to mere transactional maneuvering. The tariff war has already left its scars on American soil. Inflation creeps into every corner, while farmers bear the brunt of geopolitical posturing. Soybean farmers especially find themselves caught in this crossfire. Once courted by China as lucrative partners, they now face barren prospects since May's trade freeze. Yet, amidst these bleak realities lies a chilling truth. Capitalism thrives on chaos and uncertainty, the very elements fueling its insatiable hunger for profit above all else. In this fever dream landscape, where markets dictate morality and leaders play puppet masters with economies worldwide, we see not progress, but rather symptoms pointing toward an ever-looming collapse driven by greed unchecked and ambition unrestrained.